And it is the second weekday of the KSFR Fun Drive, and I am joined by Jason Silverman, who's director of the CCA Cinematheque. Welcome.
Welcome. This is more your natural hour, isn't it, for
Yeah, I'm not a morning person. I say good morning reflexively because I'm always on in the morning, but yes, I'm kind of a, what would you call a night owl?
You're chipper right now.
You know, what can I tell you? But it is the KSFR Fun Drive, and it's the second day that I'm on the air. I'm on in both the morning and the afternoon for this week. And yesterday we did a show that was a tribute to Diego Mulligan, who was in this 5 to 6 in the afternoon slot for so many years, well over a decade. I'm not sure exactly, like 15 years or more. Today we would like to do a show that is dedicated to the memory of the wonderful Mary Lou Cook, whom I last saw at Diego's memorial.
Mary Lou, one of Santa Fe's greatest citizens.
Yes, indeed. And so for all of those who knew her or were touched by her or who heard her, and if you didn't know her or hear her, I can guarantee that your life was probably touched by her because she was so very active in this community.
Yeah, right at the center of everything.
So 428-1393 is the number for the KSFR Fun Drive, and we are having a goal of $1,000 for this hour. We are keeping it modest, and at the same time, we are asking everybody who listens to this show, who listened to Diego, who listens to the Radio Cafe, who listens to KSFR, who likes the local news, to contribute by calling right now, 428-1393, and if we get 20 callers who give $50 each, then we will have reached our goal.
And we will.
And we will. So, Jason, you are the director of the CCA Cinematheque, and you've been doing this for...
I've just finished my ninth year.
Ah, so you're coming up on a decade. We're going to have to do a big celebration. What, I mean, I think I have noticed a kind of parallel stream between the CCA, and especially the movie program at the CCA, and what we do on KSFR.
Well, you know, I think we all value community and connection and recognize how important that is today when the world is really driven by profit. I make a speech at the beginning of a lot of movies now, and I say, all the other movie theaters in town are for-profit theaters, and they're driven by, you know, by money. We're driven by connection, by beauty, by love, and I think KSFR is the same. And a lot of organizations in Santa Fe do that same thing. And in a world where we gather at the mall, you know,
where, speak for yourself.
Well, we, our culture, where our stories come are filtered through giant corporations, and you know, where we feel like democracy is something outside of us, and you know, we're consumers, not creators, and we're consumers, not citizens, and that's the way this culture treats us. But KSFR and the CCA and Site Santa Fe and the Lensic and the hundreds of other not-for-profits and engaged citizens in town make Santa Fe different from the rest of the country.
Yeah, and the various other enclaves around the country where they're doing community radio and where they're doing community theater and the kind of independent movie theaters and the kind of independent bookstores, it really is a huge subculture of people around the country. It's not like, one of the things that I think has been really tricky is that we are told, we who are trying to keep alive truth and beauty and something other than just rank commercialism, are told that we are a tiny minority and we're living inside of a bubble, and that Cambridge and Berkeley and Santa Fe and Austin are bubbles. And I don't think that's true at all. I think we are magnets that draw people from all over the world to come here, and these are places that are continually growing, and they're places of tremendous creativity, and they are the models for the rest of the country. You know, it's sort of like you heard it here first.
I think it feels like the energy around community and independent thought is growing, not shrinking. It feels like Santa Fe is you know, visionary in that way, like the other cities you mentioned. But it seems like there's these things happening all over the place. I work for a film festival in Columbia, Missouri, and it just celebrated its 10th year. It's called the True False Film Festival. And when
True
I went
False?
True False. It's a documentary film festival.
Nice.
It's the greatest. When I went 10 years ago, there was a couple of independent shops and things downtown, but it was really quiet. This film festival started, and a lot of energy started around it, and now the downtown is thriving. It's all locally owned businesses, restaurants. There's all kinds of activity happening, and I just see that town differently now. You know, rather than boarded up chains, it's all, you know, young people owning thrift stores and bookstores and cafes and
right.
ethnic restaurants, and this is the energy that seems to be happening in a lot of smaller cities and in the bigger cities, of course.
Very interesting that you say thrift stores, because I often think that if the corporate system falls apart, and a lot of good and a lot of bad will come from that, you know, if the corporate system falls apart, but I have tried to start getting things through the secondhand stream, because there is so much stuff in this world, and there's so much fabulously recyclable and repurposable stuff, and it's really cool. It's really great.
Yeah, you can get anything you need. It's, you know, we're so addicted to buying things that people buy things that they don't need, and then they have no storage space, and and then you and I pick it up and we wear it to, you know, the opening at the independent bookstore or to the fun drive at KSFR.
Yeah, we wear it to the radio because it really matters what you wear on the radio,
yeah, that
ladies
thrift
and gentlemen.
Store sweater looks great on you.
You know, I think about probably half the things I'm wearing right now are probably thrift. But anyway, ladies and gentlemen, 428-1393 is the number at the KSFR Fun Drive, and we are looking for the phone to ring, and we are looking for your support of community radio on KSFR. And for the support of the kinds of programming that you hear, I was telling people this morning that I just saw The Great Gatsby, the Leonardo DiCaprio version of The Great Gatsby, and it was really such a poignant thing for me that, because I mean, I'd read the book, I saw other versions of the movie, and I'd completely forgotten the entire plot. And so I was watching it, it was all brand new. And everybody came to his fabulous party, and everybody wanted to be part of it, and everybody was delighted at what he did. And when he died, nobody came to the funeral, except for this one guy, and who really actually cared about him. And sometimes, if you are putting out all that energy into the world, and you're putting it out, and everybody says, oh, I listen to your show every day, and isn't it great that we have community radio and stuff like that, and then they actually don't show up during the fun drive, you think, come on, are you for real?
Well, you're paying for your storytelling one way or another. You know, if you're watching, if you're listening to corporate radio, which, by the way, is programmed, you know, all the local stations, the corporate stations, they're all programmed out of Plano, Texas or somewhere and piped in here.
Well, I mean, not all of them. There's some local.
No, the locally owned stations. Locally owned stations are programmed here. But across the country, there are DJs who are doing programming for cities, you know, hundreds and thousands of miles away.
It's true.
So they, you know, they say good morning Albuquerque, but they're in Plano.
Right.
And
or they say good morning Des Moines, and they're in, you know, Florida. And then when there's where was it?
The train accident.
Yeah, there was a train accident and a horrible chemical spill, and there were no local radio stations to get the word out, and a lot of people suffered because of that.
And people don't know that the DJ's not there in that downtown, you know, radio station. That's just the ad department.
That's right, and when the teenage girls write the guy a fan letter and he doesn't answer,
right.
They think it's just because he doesn't care.
So if you're listening to that station, which you're not because you're listening to us, but those who listen to that station, you're paying for that station by being sold advertisements. And so you're participating. You're making a choice to participate in KSFR by writing a check or pulling out your credit card. And you're becoming part of this community. You are part of this community. And by supporting it, you're making it thrive. I mean, it's a great investment in yourself and in your community and your own well-being to support KSFR.
428-1393 is the number, 428-1393. I'm not sure if the phone has been ringing. I have not gotten a report from the control room since I'm sitting here at the Santa Fe Baking Company with a nice steaming plate of cheddar tomato soup with bacon bits in it. actual bacon in it, sitting in front of me. And one of the things that I can say about this hour that we are at the beginning of, or in the first quarter of right now, is that you will not hear a single ad the whole entire hour.
Except for us demanding that you send us money.
Yes, demanding, asking politely, imploring, and basically making a case that there is a very good reason to keep KSF on the air, which is that you are listening right now. And if you want to be listening next week, then please be part of it by calling 428-1393.
So gratitude. Tell me about gratitude.
Well, and we'll get to gratitude.
Okay.
But I was actually going to ask you about the film you're working on.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'd love to talk about that.
Please do.
Well, we are in our sixth year of a film about Ousmane Sembène, who was a Senegalese artist. And he would appreciate what happens at KSFR. Ousmane Sembène.
No doubt.
Yeah, Ousmane Sembène was kicked out of school in sixth grade. He grew up in Senegal because he dared to talk back to the headmaster who slapped him. And he slapped the headmaster back.
No way.
And of course, in Senegal in the 20s and 30s, it was the schools were run by the French. And Sembène, you know, was a rebel. He grew up in a rebel town that resisted all of this colonization. And that ended his education. It didn't end his ambition. He was a dock worker. He was a mechanic. He fought in the army. And into his late 20s, early 30s, he was, like a lot of black Africans, doing menial labor of the lowest, most demeaning kind. While he was working on the docks, he broke his back, and while he was recuperating, he started to read. He had learned how to read. And he read all the great books. And
so he went to St. John's by himself, essentially.
He did. He went to St. John's by himself. It was actually a Marxist library, because he was part of a labor union.
Right.
And he said to himself, where is Africa in the literature? Africa doesn't exist, especially the Africa of the working class. And so he decided to create that, to create a literature for Africa. He wrote three very successful novels at a really crucial time in African history. And after that, decided that the books weren't going to do the work he wanted to do, because books are not accessible to most of Africans who can't afford them or don't know how to read. So in 1961, he taught himself how to make movies. And he was the first significant African filmmaker. Up until 1960, it was illegal for an African to hold a camera.
No way.
And so he taught himself, this guy with a sixth grade education, and he became one of the world's greatest filmmakers. His first feature film won the equivalent of an Oscar for best first feature. It was an award that was won by Truffaut and Godard and
so
all
an international
the great filmmakers.
Award.
Yeah, he was the first African to win that award. And onwards he went. And his films got more radical. They're brilliant films. They got more radical and more button pushing and more defiant of authority and corruption of power as he went. The reason he did this is the same reason that you get up in the morning and do your show, which is that he believed that stories matter.
Yeah.
He believed that Africa was going to disappear under the deluge of foreign stories. When he grew up, it was Hollywood films and some European films and a lot of films from India, no African films. You know, the literature was European. The magazines were European. The newspapers were controlled by the French. And so to succeed in African culture, to rise, meant in essence to embrace an outside culture and to forget your own. And I think that's an equivalent of what's happening here. You know, our local communities are forgetting their own identity. You know, we have big box stores, and we have TV piped in from other places, and local businesses are disappearing, and local newspapers are disappearing, and local radio is disappearing. And so the battle that Sembène fought was to return the power to the people via story. And he didn't just make movies and write the novels. He also started the first Wolof language literary magazine, and started the first two African film festivals, and started the first filmmakers union because he knew these institutions mattered. It wasn't just about the art. And I have a deeply respectful attitude towards anyone who does this kind of work, towards you, towards the other people at KSFR, towards the people who run the not-for-profit cultural organizations in town, because they're doing, we're all part of this picture.
Yeah, I mean, I think I had a conversation in the Bacon Company this morning after the show was over with Jack Leffler, who is going to be on the air next week, talking about the upcoming Kivira Coalition conference. And the Kivira Coalition is a very interesting organization because it brings together environmentalists and ranchers who have often been framed as people who are on opposite sides of the argument, when in fact environmentalists and ranchers really are or need to be on the same side of the argument politically and in terms of land use, because both of them love the land and both of them know that to have sustainable water, soil, grass, air is utterly and completely essential, and those things are not to be used up and, you know, you use it up and move on, but rather they are to be sustained and nurtured, because guess what? If you're on the same land for 100 years or 200 years, you better treat it in such a way that it's going to last for another couple of hundred years for your children and grandchildren and so on. And I was thinking, you know, you don't want to have an us and them, but if you're going to have an us and them, the real us and them is us versus our colonizers. Who are our colonizers? They're the ones who want to use us up and spit us out. And you can, you know, think for yourself, ladies and gentlemen, who that might be, but whoever that is, and a lot of the times it's people who, for example, extract resources from the ground and then leave pools of pollution in the water or on the land so that it becomes unusable, and leave it for the community to clean up because they wanted to just take their profits out and really not care about the community at all. When they come in, they say it's jobs. When they leave, they say tough luck.
Yeah, it's true. You know, what's interesting is the narrative of the rancher versus the environmentalist is a narrative. It's something that someone created, and then we started to believe. It's not necessarily anything that has basis in fact. There might be times where there was rivalry or competition or divergent interests,
or divergent cultural narratives that are not about the land.
And so, what's interesting about what you said is that, you know, we can question those narratives. You know, and one of the reasons we can question the narratives is because there's alternative voices. And when you have an Usman Sembène who's asking you to look at the world differently, or you have a KSFR who's asking you to look at the world differently, or you have David Barsamian or any of the great shows that are carried on KSFR, or the alternative political websites, when you have people who are allowed to tell stories that puncture the, you know, narrative that the mainstream media is giving us, or mainstream culture is giving us.
Right.
Even if you don't believe those narratives, you start thinking, well, maybe there's another side to the story. And that in itself is a fundamental conceptual shift, right? I mean, you get to the point where you say, do I need to believe this story? And once you start questioning for yourself and thinking for yourself, the world changes.
428-1393, and we've got a couple of anonymous donors who have called in, so we're very grateful to them. And I think we have at least one or two people who have also given their name. So if Nick is in the control
room.
That's
right, Jerry Freed.
Oh, thank you, Jerry Freed.
Thank you.
And let's keep the telephones ringing, 428-1393. I received an email just now that said that we have a $500 challenge. So somebody has put up $500 if you and I can raise $500, and then we meet our goal of 1,000. What do you say, Jason?
We can do it.
We have a half an hour. We have more than half an hour to do so. 428-1393. That means we need 10 calls of $50 each. Of course, if you want to give more, that is fine with us. But 428-1393. Let's ring those telephones. Let's ring them good. And if you are calling from out of the Santa Fe area and you're using a landline and you want the toll-free number, I will give that to you. That is 866-907-5737. That's 866-907-KSFR. So how did you come across Jason Silverman? We're talking to Jason Silverman, who's director of the CCA Cinematheque. the story of Sembène.
I became friends with his biographer, who is himself a remarkable man. Sambaga Djigo was born in a village on the border of Senegal and Mali, and it was a hard way to live, the way he lived. Beautiful, too, but, you know, it was a sustenance living in his village, and he worked hard in school so he could escape to the regional high school, of which there was only a couple in Senegal. And he succeeded in doing that, and he got to the regional high school. By the time he was 17 years old, he didn't realize this, but he had forgotten the stories that his grandmother was telling him and was fully immersed in French culture. So he thought of himself as an aspirant Frenchman, which, of course, he never could be.
Right. And to be a second-class citizen within that framework.
Right. He was on his way to becoming a clerk in a French, you know, business office. And someone handed him one of Ousmane Sembène's books, and it was the light bulb moment. It was the first book he read where Africans were the heroes. It was written in an African language. There was a character named Samba in it. It was in places that he recognized. And all of a sudden, it was Eureka, I have my own culture. And he set off on a journey at that point to learn more about African culture. It changed his life, with Sembène at the very center of it. 17 years later, he had finished his PhD in African studies in the U.S., and he had the opportunity to bring an African artist to the U.S., so he went to find Sembène. And after some convincing, he was able to bring Sembène for a U.S. tour, and the two became very close, and they worked together for the subsequent 17 years.
Wow! And how old was Sembène by that time?
Sembène was then in his mid-60s.
Okay.
And so we were on set at Sembène's last film, which he started when he was 83 years old, with our cameras. and we have all this incredible footage. And, the story of that is remarkable because Sembène had completely fallen from grace and from public view when Samba met him. And he had a resurgence in his mid-70s. And he made three films between his mid-70s and his death at in 2007. And the last film won an award at the Cannes Film Festival, and Roger Ebert called it the best film of the year, made when he was, completed when he was 84 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
And this is a man who had a tough life. So that was there was a lot of living in those 84 years.
Right.
And in the years since Sembène's death, Samba has really carried the torch forward. And so the last scene of the film, I don't want to give spoilers, is us taking Sembène's films out to a remote village where people had not seen films before, with our generators and our DVD player and a portable screen, and showing a film that was very relevant in subject matter to the village.
Which goes to show you, this whole story and the importance of bringing stories of a people out to people whom it affects and people who could identify with those stories, is the power of stories. The thing that you said before that struck me was that it was illegal for an African person to hold a camera. That just shows that if you actually have the means to represent yourself and you do so, that is the most dangerous, or put it another way, empowering thing that you can do.
Well, you have to ask the question, why would the French make that law?
Yeah.
Why would they say, no, you can't hold a camera? What if they could find a camera? Would it be okay? The camera was considered as dangerous as the gun.
Right.
It was considered a weapon, a potential weapon. Because these battles aren't won on the battlefield. They're won in the brain. They're ideological battles. And I think the danger here in America is that we don't even realize that there is a battle going on. I mean, we do, but a lot of people don't even see that there's a fairly significant force, a very powerful forces that want to keep us from thinking for ourselves.
428-1393 is the number. If you can relate to or resonate with anything that we're talking about, please call and give a donation. We're looking for 10 $50 donations between now and 5 o'clock. Well, I think some of them have come in. I don't know. Again, I don't know quite the numbers yet, but the phones have been a little quiet. So please give a call, 505-428-1393. And I think that the importance of storytelling on the radio, the importance of storytelling through film, is something that you certainly can't measure it, but you also have these light bulb moments of your own. Do you have one that you remember, like something that changed the way you see things in a fundamental way?
You know, when I was younger, I helped run a film festival in Taos called the Taos Talking Picture Festival. And it was a festival that was founded on the belief that we need to be very careful about what we watch. We are what we watch. And so in addition to showing movies, we'd bring out all these great media activists and scholars and people like, we brought Howard Zinn and we brought Naomi Klein and Jim Hightower and people like that. And there was constant light bulb moments then. And we had someone named Ben Badikian who came out. He had written a book A media critic. He'd written a book about how 40% of newspapers, magazines, radio, TV was controlled by, you know, 8 corporations. Well, then he did a revised edition and another revised edition. By the time he was done revising it, edition number 7, those numbers were like, you know, 80% of the media was controlled by 4 or 5 corporations. And it was shocking to me because I always thought that the local newspaper was the local newspaper. And I thought that the local radio station was the local radio station. That consolidation has gotten worse in terms of the mainstream culture. Of course, there's all these wonderful cracks in the wall now. Things like KSFR, which have been happening for years and years, but also through the internet, through internet radio, blogs, and so
podcasts.
There's all kinds of ways that you can hear different kinds of stories. But at the point where I started learning about what was happening, I became dedicated to finding ways to share alternative stories with people. And that's what the CCA's Cinematheque is really about. You know, I love movies, and we all love the movies, but the idea that we're going to show a great movie is, underneath that, the mission is really to give something different to see, something that will provoke them and make them think about the world a little differently.
428-1393 is the number. Please give us a call to participate in this dialogue, and please let us know when you call what you think about KSFR and what you think about this program and what you really appreciate hearing, because that's, you know, the fundraiser is the time of the year. We try to do it about twice a year, when we really get to hear from our listeners, and they can give constructive criticism or praise, or they can rant if they want. Don't have too many ranters, but there's some ranters from time to time, and that's fine too, because that's part of the dialogue. But the number is 428-1393. I'm going to say it one more time slowly. 428-1393. Something that you said a moment ago, Jason, really resonates with me, because there was this moment where in my 20s I saw some weird, like, business self-help tape or something. It was completely cheesy and made by people who I have no idea who it was, but they basically said, you know, that addressing the question of who are you really, the answer to that question of who are you really is you are the way you spend your time. Yeah. And that is the bottom line. If you spend all your time complaining, you're a complainer. If you spend all your time loving, you're a lover. If you spend a rich life doing a lot of different things, you are a generalist. You know, it's if you spend your entire life trying to get deals, you're a dealer, you know?
Right.
And so, I mean, this is it. And what happens is you think that you have all the time in the world, and then sometime, I think for most people, it's probably in their 40s when the body becomes less than what it used to be, and you realize sometime in your 40s that half your life is probably gone. You know, when you get to 50, you might live to be 100, but you probably won't. I mean, our beloved Mary Lou Cook died at the age of 95. So sometime this mortality thing happens, and you realize that every single moment of your life is meaningful because you're going to choose how you spend it in some way.
Yeah, and all the things that you have and all the skills you have and the resources you have. I attended the Lynn Twist fundraising workshop a couple of months ago, and she talked about she talked a lot about, you know, liberating your energy. I used to be afraid to ask for money, you know. And now I think of myself as a fundraiser, but I don't think about it as in a derogatory way. I think that I spend my time liberating money that's stuck in someone's bank account so that it can water Santa Fe, so that it can flow through Santa Fe. And
so it can make a film about Simbin, for example.
For example. Or that it can, bring some students in to see a film that might matter for them. And that's what we're doing here, is we're asking our family members, our KSFR family members, to liberate some of that stuck energy that's in their bank accounts. And
even if that's $5 a month.
It doesn't matter what it is. It's actually the act of doing it is really what's important. Of saying, this money will flow through Santa Fe in a way that will make Santa Fe flourish. This money will hydrate Santa Fe. And this money will make Santa Fe stronger. This money will keep Santa Fe growing. You need to liberate those dollars out of your bank account and keep them moving, and then they're going to do good in the world.
Yeah. 428-1393. And we are, I can't do math right now, but we are well on our way to reaching the $500 goal. And let's keep those phones ringing. Let's get a whole bunch more $50 contributions so that we can reach our goal for our $500 match. Maybe we can even double that so that we can get $1,500 for this hour. Let's try to reach our $1,000 goal.
I would love to chip in some movie tickets if that would help motivate some people.
Yes! We were going to talk about that. If people give a contribution of I think it's a pretty low number. I think it's $35. You will get a pair of movie tickets to the CCA, as well as watering the beautiful plant that is the beautiful fruitful tree that is KSFR.
Yeah. It's a tree. It's actually kind of like one of those aspens are just one tree, right? Did I learn that right?
Yeah, there's I don't know exactly the botany of that, but when you have a grove of aspens, they're all totally connected, even though they look like separate trees.
It's one organism.
Yeah.
And that's more of what KSFR does, because KSFR is everywhere. It's in there, you're walking down the street and you hear it blaring out of the window. You know, it's on people's radios at the office. People are streaming it, it's in every corner of Santa Fe.
At this moment, Jason Silverman is ubiquitous.
That's right. I'm everywhere. I'm in your brain.
Well, you think about the kind of technology we have today and how completely Star Trek it would have just seemed to somebody living a mere 100 years ago. So the idea that you can open the New York Times anywhere in the world at the exact same moment, and when they print it, it's in Moscow, it's in Antarctica, it's in Cape Town, and it's in New York.
Right. It's an incredibly powerful moment for storytelling.
Right.
The access. We can sit and complain about the mainstream media, but honestly, there's never been a moment quite as bright as this for storytelling. I mean, it was YouTube's 6 years old, or seven
Is
years
that
old.
All?
Yeah. It's brand new.
And how many cute dog videos have you seen on it?
Just 35 today. Just the ones you sent me links to. I haven't gotten through all of them, but I got through the first half. 20 years ago, filmmaking was a completely exclusive club.
That's right.
You needed to have enough money to have a 35mm camera. There's some exceptions
and
to that.
Processing,
lighting, etc. And the advent of the digital age has changed everything. So if you're a kid in a remote village in New Mexico or in Peru or in Senegal and you have a phone and an internet connection, you can be a filmmaker and you can tell your own story, and it doesn't have to be driven by for-profit concerns. It can be a story that's just for your class at school. It can be a story that for your high rise, your apartment high rise. It could be a story about injustice on the small level. It could be a fantasy that is relevant only to you. The lowest common denominator element of storytelling in the media age has disappeared. I mean, it hasn't disappeared because Hollywood still exists. God bless it. But that imperative is not the only imperative anymore. Now the imperative can be connection. And so, you saw it with... you see it in any kind of revolution or crisis around the world, that all of a sudden you're getting stories from the street, stories that contradict the official narrative. And it's a fascinating time because of that. And again, you know, to bring it back to KSFR, KSFR is the kind of core storytelling institution in Santa Fe. It's the place where the independent stories go. And we need those institutions, in addition to all the people who are blogging, in addition to all the kids who've got their, you know, are making animations on their Macintoshes.
That's right.
We need the institutions that show us how to do it right.
4281393. We still haven't quite reached our $500 match yet, so we would love if you would participate in that and get a bunch more calls at with either $50 contributions, $25 contributions, $5 a month, $10 a month, whatever you can do. You don't have to have your name read aloud. You can make a donation in honor of the wonderful Mary Lou Cook. You can make a donation in the name of Diego Mulligan, who was in this slot for so many years. You can make a donation in honor of somebody in your family or a beloved animal. I'm an animal person. 4281393 is the number. One of the things that people sometimes ask me about the Santa Fe Radio Cafe is, how come you don't do point-counterpoint? Why don't you do people with opposing views and put them on and let them battle it out together? And I don't like to do that, not because I'm conflict-averse, although I'm probably a little bit conflict-averse, but because I think, first of all, I have some guidelines on my show, which is no hatred, stupidity, or ignorance, if I can possibly help it. So that's one thing. But what happens is there are people who come on the show, great thinkers, and what I want is to hear everything that they have to say, to hear who they are, to hear what their very best thinking is on their subject, to bring that out, give them a platform, give them a pedestal on which to really, really broadcast that, and then you take it home and you chew on it.
I just completely disagree with that philosophy.
Hang on.
I'm just kidding.
I'm going to disagree with you. No, I mean, there are people who do. But the thing is, what happens is there are people who are truly great thinkers, and then you give them, you know, you give them their due, and then you go think about it. And one of the, recently we had on Steven Pinker, who is a speaker for the Santa Fe Institute in the Public Community Lecture Series. That's an amazing lecture series, and, you know, super brainy people. He's a Harvard psychologist, and he'd written a book about how violence has been declining precipitously over the last centuries, and particularly over the last half century, which is really, or the rate of violence, which is really kind of hard to believe. And I asked him, but he, you know, he makes a good case for it. And I said, but what about the violence against nature? You know, what about, like, trawling the bottom of the seas and clear-cutting the forest and mountaintop removal? And he said, well, those things aren't done with the intention of violence. You know, he just sort of brushed it off. And I've been thinking about that ever since. And I'm like, you know what? He's wrong. That violence, the violence which might have been acted out in slavery, might have been acted out in war, might have been acted out and still is acted out in torture in many ways, for whatever gain, the fact that that is now acted out against nature, and that basically we are killing the oceans, the forest, the soil, and the air, that is every bit as violent as violence against human beings.
What I love about that story is that you asked that question, and maybe he brushed it off in the moment. I have a strong suspicion that he's been thinking about it since. And what I love about, I have to just praise Mary Charlotte for a second in the Radio Cafe, is that there is a dialogue here, and it's a lot of it's about local events. I mean, you can see these things on PBS and other places too, where there's intelligent dialogue and there's you know, there's questions that provoke deeper thought. But it happens every morning on the Radio Cafe, Mary Charlotte and her guest hosts, and so you get these great thinkers on, and there'll be questions that they actually haven't been asked before. And I've actually talked to some of your guests in the past who were surprised that they, you know, they told me stories about the kinds of questions they get from other, it's like the pre-programmed questions.
Yeah.
There's the six questions that they're going to ask every guest, and the adjectives will change. But on this show, you actually read the books, and watch the movies.
And think about them.
And you ask questions.
That's the point, is thinking.
And you actually
about it.
Ask questions that are designed to provoke, yeah. Not questions that are designed to get a static, pre-programmed answer. And so, you know.
Not provoke in a negative way, though. Like, just to provoke, bring out. Like,
I think provoke is a good word. I don't actually associate negative. You know, I don't have a judgment about provoke.
Okay.
I think you're not trying to create hate speech. You want to get people thinking and talking. That's I like doing that with the movies too. It's nice to show movies that have just make people happy. But the ones that get people thinking and talking on the way out.
Yeah.
Are the ones that are really valuable. That's what we need. We need to think a little more about where we are and who we are right now.
428-1393. We had a little flurry of calls, and we're going to get a few thank yous, a few real donors, a few real anonymous donors, some with names, some without. But we really need that phone to ring. 428-1393 and make our $1,000 for this hour. And Jason Silverman's beautiful son, Theo, is, when I mentioned his name, he ran away, but he is nearby and just a lovely soul. And I think that if there's any testament to the beauty of what you do, Jason, in your life, besides giving us these fantastic movies, you've also given us a member of the next generation who is just a radiant, lovely spirit.
He has his moments.
428-1393. We've only got about 12 or 13 minutes left in this hour, so let's make them good.
So did you have a moment where that the veil lifted, where you realized your unreality bubble around storytelling popped?
You know, there were a number of them. One of them was a kind of, it wasn't a single moment of reading, but it was basically the discovery of feminist literature, because I had been raised in this way that, I mean, much as I love my, you know, family and surroundings and all the generosity of the people who were around me, I was raised in a very sexist time and a very sexist culture in which women were considered definitely second-class citizens, and if you were going to be a strong and powerful woman, you had to be like a guy. And that's a game, of course, that we can never win. You know, it's sort of like it's like an African trying to be a Frenchman. He can never be a Frenchman. He can be an African. That's what he is. And so that was a big moment for me. And the other thing was, how do I say this? I used to, when I was in high school and college, read the New York Times. And I couldn't understand it. And I would read the front page, and I would try to read the Week in Review. And I felt really bad about myself because I couldn't understand what the articles were saying. It didn't make any sense to me. I didn't have a context, and I, you know, sort of berated myself for not having a big enough understanding of history. And then, when I graduated from college, or actually I think my last year there, I started reading The Nation magazine. Now, The Nation magazine is not really uplifting. It does not make you happy. But what it did for me in those years, and this was during the Reagan administration when they were fighting a lot of wars against the revolutionaries in Central America especially, what I began to understand was what the people in Central America were fighting for in the first place. And once I understood that, the whole idea of what class war was about, what national sovereignty was about, what landowners and indigenous peoples' struggles were about, all of that fell into place, and none of it was ever mentioned in the New York Times. Or if it was mentioned in a way that was so veiled that you couldn't understand it unless you already knew it from reading something else. And it all fell into place. And then I can understand what the New York Times mentions, mostly because I also read other things and have a context to put that stuff into. Your beautiful son just handed you a note?
Yeah, I got lectured for parking badly. All four wheels were in the two lines. No, it's true. There's a missing narrative. I mean, I remember reading Howard Zinn's People's History of the United States.
That was another one. That was another light bulb book for me.
And you realize that there's certain kinds of stories that just don't get told. And those stories are actually the stories that are probably more relevant to our lives. You know, they're more about us.
Yeah.
They're written from our point of view generally. And we're distracted from those stories. Those stories can make us uncomfortable.
And they can also really make us identify. I mean, for me, women's stories and women's history and the history of people who weren't fighting battles. I mean, I remember being in, you know, third, fourth, fifth, sixth grade all through high school and having to read stories about battles, and that was called history. And I just wanted to die of boredom because I'm not interested then. I wasn't interested. Now I'm interested now in battles. Sorry, gentlemen out there who love battles. Go for it. But I just, there's nothing there for me. And these other histories, it was like, oh, this is what people's daily lives were like. This is what people's towns were like. This is what people's work days were like.
Yeah, and this is what KSFR and the CCA and, again, the Lenzik and all of the, you know, Meowwolf and Little Globe and Site Santa Fe and all of these other organizations that exist only to give us an alternative. You know, that's basically what they do, to connect people, to give people gathering spaces. And, you know, when people get together and they talk, they puncture those narratives, too. That's another thing that happens. I mean, I think the mainstream culture, the marketing whizzes that have spent all these billions of dollars and decades trying to get into our lizard brains, they would love for us to stay on our couches.
Right.
And not get together, because no kind of powerful social change is going to happen while we're sitting on our couches. It's going to happen when we're gathered in the same places, when we've heard some stories that differ from the official narrative.
428-1393, and we've got some thank yous from the control room.
Yes, we do. Mark Delfs.
Thank you.
Anonymous, in honor of Mary Lou Cook.
Yay.
Thanks to Annie McGuy, in memory of Diego.
Yay.
Joanne Garges, in memory of Diego.
Thank you.
And the Reverend Hollis Walker.
Hollis, thank you so much.
In honor of Mary Charlotte and Jason Silverman, who have done so much for the community.
And Hollis Walker sits in for this show on a fairly regular basis, and she's a wonderful person and wonderful host. 428-1393. We're still about $100 and some short of our challenge, so let's get a bunch of calls in the last 5 minutes of this show. Seriously, folks, 428-1393. If I can't even make a $500 challenge in 1 hour, and if you don't support the Radio Cafe during this hour, I don't know.
I'm going to throw in a medium popcorn with those two tickets.
We
got to get the match.
Tickets to the CCA will be yours for a very modest contribution to KSFR. And let's get some of those contributions where you give $5, $10, $15, $20 a month. Any amount per month that you want to give would be fantastic and would earn you some tickets to the CCA and all kinds of good things.
And your dollar, every dollar you put in right now counts as two.
Yeah, but only if we make our 500, which we haven't even made our 500 yet.
We need to make that 500.
428-1393, 428-1393. So in the last 5 minutes of the show, I would like to say that Mary Lou Cook, who I got to know fairly well, I visited her a bunch of times in the nursing home where she lived the last years of her life and in the apartment that she lived in before that, and she was a person who was inspiring through her love, her activity, and her equanimity. And her motto was, live in joy even though you know the facts.
Well, the facts are joy. I mean, there's some ugliness out there, too.
There's some serious ugliness out there.
There's some serious ugliness, but, you know, all you got to do is look around you here in Santa Fe, and you can see all kinds of things to make you happy.
It's true. Live in joy, ladies and gentlemen, even though you know the facts. She had that. She calligraphed that. She was an expert calligrapher, and she made these things and then printed them and gave them out to people and made books that were calligraphed. She had, I think it was a book, handmade book of quotations by Denis Kucinich, which she had calligraphed.
I could see that. I could see a pillow, a Denis Kucinich pillow on her.
Right.
I could imagine one.
428-1393. I think the phone is ringing. Let's get all four phones ringing because we really got to make our challenge during this hour. 428-1393. So What do you have playing at the CCA right now?
Well, as always lately, we have 20 Feet from Stardom, which is such a delightful
film.
Oh,
it's still going on. Good.
It's still going on. We've got a film about J.D. Salinger, which ends on Thursday.
Okay.
A film called Drinking
Buddies. Do you love it?
It's not, well, not, I don't, but it's interesting. It's an interesting piece. You know, a little long and ponderous, but interesting. And Patient Stone, which is a fantastic film. The last couple shows of that are happening. And it's an interesting story about a woman who, after her husband, who has been silent her whole life, after her husband is shot and he's dying and he has no voice, she testifies. She tells her whole life story to him. No one's ever listened to her. She's been a woman, presumably in Afghanistan, who has never had the opportunity to talk.
Oh, my goodness.
And she has this opportunity to finally tell her story and testify and in essence, cleanse herself. And kind of in extension cleanse the despair of the women of her generation.
Amazing. That's the kind of stuff you get at the CCA, ladies and gentlemen. I've had my life changed by movies at the CCA. And actually there was a movie when I very first moved here. I think I hadn't moved here yet. I was going to St. John's, and it was 1989, and there was a film from Mali, and I don't know if I'd ever seen an African film before. And it was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen, and it stays in my mind as one of the most beautiful, moving, and aesthetically different experiences of my whole entire life.
Was it Brightness?
Yes.
Brightness, okay.
Is that like their big premiere film of all time?
Well, it's one of the incredible African films. You know,
I gotta get my hands on that again.
These films from other places in the world, and the stories you hear in KSFR, they're made out of love. You know, if you're going to make a film in Africa, or if you're going to do a radio show in Santa Fe, you're going to do it because you are sure that it matters, and you have to do it.
Right.
Because that's all that can motivate you, because it's going to be hard, and there very likely is not going to be any financial reward. And
it's not the big bucks, ladies and gentlemen. We all make a living at the radio station. Jason Silverman makes a living, but we're not doing it to get rich.
You know, you can't, and so your motivation has to come from somewhere else.
We are almost at our $500 limit, our $500 goal for this hour, which is really $1,000, so let's just do it. Three more calls. Two more calls would do it, but let's get three more calls before the top of the hour. 428-1393, 428-1393, or toll free 866-907-KSFR. Jason Silverman is director of the Cinematheque at the CCA, which is the Center for Contemporary Arts, here in Santa Fe on Old Pecos Trail. It's a wonderful, wonderful place. And if you call, we're going to come back right after the news and give our thank yous and see who has gotten the free passes to the Cinematheque. But Jason, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
It's a great honor.
And thanks to all of you who've contributed, and keep on calling 428-1393, keep KSFR on the air for another half a year. Thank you.